You're listening to Charisma Kills Radio with special guest Neil Caput. Hello and welcome to this episode of Charisma Kills Radio. I am Jesse Craig, your host and traveler of both time and space. The NOLA Time Fest 2014 is where I've been. If you missed it and do not possess a time machine of your own to go back and rectify that misfortune, it's okay. You can check out the show notes for this episode at charismakills.blogspot.com and find links to Time Fest, Crew to Who, the Consortium of Genius, and Charisma Kills on Facebook to see what you missed. Time Fest was created by the Louisiana-based Doctor Who fan group, Crew to Who, and the Consortium of Genius in 2013. Time Fest is a New Orleans sci-fi convention that celebrates Doctor Who and the time travel genre. This was the second year for the event, and its momentum and popularity are growing fast. So as you're checking those links out, go ahead and bookmark them so you can stay updated and begin making your plans for Time Fest 2015. If you're listening to this episode and expecting to hear part two of comic creator Charlie Wise's interview, don't worry, you're not crazy. Charlie and I decided that we will re-record that episode so we can include updated material. So keep an eye out for Charlie Wise's episode 2.5, which will be coming in the near future. This week's special guest will be Neil Caput. Neil is a comic enthusiast, a fellow webcomic underdog, and the creator of the webcomic Ruby Nation. You can read Ruby Nation at therubynation.com. Neil is a native of California, born and raised in Santa Barbara. He now lives in Los Angeles with his wife and cat. And speaking of cats, Neil also has a side project webcomic called Poet Kitties. You can check that out at poetkitties.com. And now, all the way from Los Angeles, here he is, Neil Caput. Hello, Neil, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jesse. Good to be here.
And how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. I can't complain. Before we move on into Ruby, how about we take a few moments to get you better acquainted with the guest?
Okay, so relevant information. Born and raised in Southern California, been reading comics pretty much all my life, ever since I first encountered a Calvin and Hobbes strip in the newspaper.
So what comic titles and genres do you typically read?
All kinds of comics, independent, Marvel and DC, mature readers, all ages, manga. I try to read whatever I can get my hands on simply because I read comics so fast and I want to read as much as possible and not leave out anything based on preconceived notions.
So what was the catalyst that got you involved in creating comics?
I just liked drawing, and as I was reading the comics as a kid, like reading X-Men, I started to think up my own stories with those characters, and eventually I just decided to create my own characters. It's kind of an intuitive thing. I don't do it because I can. I do it because I can't not do it. Even a week in which I miss an update on my site, it feels miserable.
Yeah, I'm no stranger to that feeling myself. I don't believe I've updated Sweet Dreams in several months and quite possibly almost a year for Apocalypse Pizza. But luckily those Sweet Dreams updates will be starting pretty soon. I'm going to get back to updating the short story Mind Shock, which exists between book one and two. So when not working on Ruby, you are a freelance writer. You work with youth and teenagers as well as teaching disabled adults general life skills.
Yes.
Well, that's definitely a noble career path. What got you started on that?
Because I was born autistic myself, even though I was not diagnosed as such until I was 20, and I felt really isolated a lot of my life, just fundamentally different, and I wished I had someone in my life back then who was older but understood me for that. So I'm in my day job, I'm trying to be that for other people who are in my situation.
Well, that is definitely a commendable career path you chose. While I'm not autistic, I do suffer from some issues that cause me to struggle quite often in life and the things that I pursue. So I definitely salute you on that.
Thank you.
Comics. What comics are you currently reading? What has your interest?
Right now, my current favorite comics are Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples.
Oh, yeah.
Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to think, is there a superhero comic that I'm reading that I'm still excited about? Oh, I guess that would have to go to the new Miss Marvel by G. Willow Winston.
Oh, yeah.
G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona with the 16-year-old Pakistani-American superheroine.
Well, that's what I'm going to have to check out. Thanks for the heads up on that. I'll have them add that to my folder. I really have been more into indie comics now. I've kind of lost my taste for the mainstream, the big two. Well, I can't say that 100%. There are still a few titles that I read, but for the most part, I'm kind of out of the loop.
You're not missing much, but
that's what I've heard.
That is a particularly good book, and I applaud both the creative team for doing it and Marvel for actually publishing it and so far keeping it independent from the rest of the line. Though I imagine if it gets successful, it's only a matter of time before they start tying it into all the crossovers.
Well, then I definitely better hurry up and get it on my folder before that happens. I try to keep up on the industry as a whole because I'm looking to print and distribute myself. I can't remember where I read it, but somewhere online I came across that DC may be entertaining the idea of another reboot soon.
I'm not sure about that. I think the main New 52 reboot that they did, it was successful for them in the very short term, but between having basically erased so many characters' histories and thus all the reasons that fans had to care about them, well,
yeah,
not creating anything particularly compelling in their place and routinely chasing away the creative talent in favor of editorial-driven stories, that I think they're pretty much going to have a reboot at some point soon just to salvage how badly they ruined their brand.
Yeah, that was definitely a heartbreaker for me. And I mean, they produced most of the titles that I read prior to 52, and I think the straw that broke the camel's back for me was what they did to Lobo.
Right, where they turned him from a comedy character to a super serious character.
Yeah, turning him into that Chippendale thing. They lost so much of the context of Lobo's character, and I know they pissed quite a few people off.
Yeah, and even if they wanted people to take him seriously, making him look like Robert Smith from The Cure is not the way to go about it.
Yeah, I remember when I walked into the comic shop and saw that on that Supergirl issue on the shelf for the first time, I just almost lost my mind. I almost bought every issue on the shelf just so I can bring it home and burn them, and as well as sparing other readers, especially new readers, from having to witness that crime that they perpetrated, that assassination of Lobo's character that they did. Ugh.
you're assuming that DC has new readers or even cares about new readers at this point.
Yeah, good point and very true. Here's a question for you. This is one I always like to ask comic enthusiasts. Where do you see the future of comics? I've been hearing about this predicted implosion of the comic industry. What's your opinion on this?
I honestly don't know. And though there are plenty of people who will say they know where it's headed, I don't really think anyone does, because
true.
A lot of it's just, a lot of things have happened that have been unprecedented. I don't think anyone saw The Walking Dead going from a reasonably successful creator-owned book, which sells very little compared to the superhero books, to becoming a merchandising empire with its TV show and its video games.
Yeah, that it has.
And I don't think that anyone saw Image going from a bunch of pretty transparent ripoffs of Marvel characters to a creator-owned publishing house that's a legitimate threat to Marvel and DC without relying on 70-year-old characters. I don't even think anyone saw all these properties from Marvel and DC being turned into movies coming either. It really does feel like a brave new world.
Mm-hmm.
We even have, from webcomics, Axe Cop, of all things, as a Fox animated show.
Yeah.
So it's simultaneously exciting and a bit terrifying sometimes, because you don't know how long this is going to last, if it's going to continue. I mean, I'm sure comics will survive, just for the reason that because we do it, because anyone can do it, just draw a picture, a series of pictures, and make a story out of it, and now put it on the internet. It won't die because of that, but the industry as we know it, I don't know where that's headed. And I do have a bit of concern that once the film and TV studios have gotten all the IPs they feel are worth doing from the companies, they're just going to leave them out to dry. I don't know how profitable Marvel and DC are from their comics divisions, but in relative terms, they're making absolute peanuts compared to their owners. And I get the sense that they exist to create new IPs. And once people get sick of superheroes, and I think that's going to come, especially if the quality of the material dips, which it most certainly has and most certainly will again.
Yeah, there was also something I read about Marvel a while back, and I wish that I could say where. I just don't remember, but I'm sure a Google search would find it, that Disney is planning to phase out the monthly periodical Marvel Comics and just deal specifically with trade paperbacks, graphic novels, and have those periodicals released as digital comics.
I hadn't heard that. I don't know if they'd actually do it, but I mean, it would be terrible for the actual comic stores.
It would.
I could see them doing it and not caring about how they basically gut all the specialty stores around there, all those places that I go to every Wednesday like clockwork.
Yes, that would be a serious blow to comic retailers indeed. Now, let's go ahead and get down to your comic, Ruby Nation. And listeners can read Ruby Nation at therubynation.com. And there's also a very impressive wiki page located at rubynation.wikispaces.com. And when I say impressive, I am not exaggerating. This is a very in-depth wiki. Readers can find just about anything about the comic here. The world is covered, characters are covered in depth, there's a timeline. The original Ruby comic, Ruby's World, is also detailed here. So I definitely encourage you folks listening to check out that wiki as well as read the comic. Okay, the world of the Ruby saga. the world that you have created for Ruby and her antagonist and protagonist is highly detailed, very in-depth world. Why don't we start by you giving us some insight into this world?
It's just ahead of our world in terms of time. In terms of technology, it's light years ahead because of the nanotech, but that hasn't been disseminated into the general public. And in the recent story, it sort of has, in that it's been used to pretty much enslave every human as part of a hive mind. But before that, it was a lot of it was occurring off the grid between Ruby's team, and who are loosely funded by America, and the Beagle Labs people, who are also funded by America, were funded earlier, created massive armies of super soldiers and raised massive collateral to create their new order. And this current arc, the Apex State, deals with the fallout from that. And it's, I realized I didn't put too much effort into the world building part at the beginning, back when it was just the old Ruby's World comics. And that's one reason why I had the Ruby Nation reboot, partly to create a new jumping on point from a place where I was more confident in my writing and drawing skills, and partly to kind of allow myself to take a step back and reconceptualize the world and the way I saw it and what these characters deal with. It is a very bleak world. I'll be upfront in saying that.
And that's one of the things that appeals to me about Ruby Nation, is the way that you fuse the superhero genre with this gritty, disparaging real world, and how it influences the characters and how they influence it.
Yeah.
Okay, so proto-humans. This is Ruby Nation's answer to the category of superhero, mutant, metahuman. It's basically the term used in this world that separates those with these extraordinary abilities from the average Joes. And as you mentioned earlier, this is the result of technology, the nanobots that...
Yeah, it's what gives them abilities like Ruby's size and strength, or Jiro's speed, or Lisa's wings. The notion is that the nanotechnology, it's very commonplace in fiction now. I'll admit that I use it similarly to the way that 60s authors used radioactivity to explain things. But it does raise some interesting implications. Like, if you have these miniature, incredibly smart supercomputers that can go into someone's bloodstream and rewrite their DNA and tell their body what to do, what are you going to do with that? I guess one thing that I try to keep bringing up, even though I don't know how much people have picked up on it, is that you can do that and you can decide which traits in a human are desirable and which aren't. And at some point, you can impose that on other people. I know that with my own condition and autism, there are some people who would want me cured, and I personally wouldn't want that because it's just the way I am. I've never known anything else, and whoever I became, if my brain were completely rewired, would not be me. And obviously there are some people with disabilities, particularly disabilities that impair them more than I might be impaired, who feel differently, but it's still the precedent is like who decides who's broken and who's not, who fixes who's broken and who's not. We're getting to the point where you can like screen genetically for autism or Down syndrome or what have you and abort a fetus before it's even born. And that's not even aborting because you can't take care of a child. It's because you choose not to take care of a particular kind of child. And that deeply disturbs me.
Yes, the implications of the advancements of these sciences and technologies have versus morality and ethics has been with us since Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and likely beyond. In my comics, I have what I call meta deviance, and unlike in comics like X-Men, the nations and governments of the world, for the most part, have classified and regulated these individuals that are different.
That's a good terminology, especially for the way they tend to be perceived by others.
Thank you. So the psychological and sociological play between society and these individuals that are different, it's a common theme in a lot of stories, especially in comics. How does that mechanic work in Ruby Nation?
Well, a lot of it's unknown to the general public, and parts where Ruby was public in past stories don't really fit into the current series, and I think might have to do something retconny at some point like that. But basically, the heroic characters are on their own. They have limited support from a U.S. government who is clearly just using them because they're useful, get them out of the mess they created by funding Beagle and its super weapons. But they could just as easily be cut out to dry at any moment. And it's the human soldiers that are basically watching them. They have to realize that they're basically being treated like captive animals. They're being looked at like captive animals and not actual human beings.
All right, so how about we take a look at the characters of Ruby Nation? You have a group of main characters, Ruby, Elise, Jiro.
Yeah, those are Ruby, Jiro, and Elise are the main three.
So let's take a look at the story's main protagonist, Ruby. Give us a little insight into how she came about.
I was thinking about ways to create a character who had a very different look about her that immediately made her stand out from the crowd, and also a character who would be attractive despite that, because even though she's 9 feet tall, Ruby is relatively pretty for a girl her age. She doesn't look like a monster per se, though many people perceive of her as one when they're around her just because of this difference. And also going with the gentle giant concept of giving someone tremendous capacity for violence, but giving that to someone who's fundamentally decent person and who does not want to hurt people.
Yes, you do a good job with Ruby, portraying her as this powerhouse of a character. However, she's still this reluctant hero that values life and doesn't enjoy the violence and the things that are going on around her. So, Jiro, let's talk about him.
I created him to make a convincing autistic character in the story who is a major part of the plot and isn't just... usually in fiction, you have disabled characters who basically exist just to make the other characters look better, like the heroes look nicer for treating them well, or the villains look worse for hurting them. Jiro is autistic. He's also enhanced with biomechanical body and superhuman speed, but that doesn't really change the challenges he faces, just dealing with people and trying to interact with them. He is in a relationship with Ruby, and he unwittingly fathered a child with her that she's currently carrying. And as a character, he's a lot more intense. He's someone who is a lot more driven, who is more willing to actually be violent. He has a similar code of ethics to Ruby, except he's much more willing to get his hands dirty. He's also much less suited to being the kind of gentle, kind, parental figure that Ruby is, even though that's kind of expected, because he's kind of the dad of the group if Ruby's the mom.
All right, so Elise, tell us about her.
least she's introduced as someone who has a much more optimistic viewpoint than anyone else, who sees this having powers as being fun, and this is a big heroic adventure. And as she finds out, both from her own psychology, what the memories she's lost and the behaviors she now finds compulsive, and from what she encounters in the world around her, this really isn't the case. This isn't, I mean, there are a lot of stories where teenagers are heroes who fight for justice. This is, my story is one of them. But it's very easy to forget how young the characters are and how much less equipped they are to handle the kind of stresses that happen on a battlefield. At least here, the characters are, Elise is 17, so she's only 1 year away from being legally able to enlist in the military. And whether or not that's right, it's up to the individual whether or not they want to fight, but it's still at an age where they don't have the kind of defensive mechanisms that one would desperately need to cope with stresses of the battlefields, as we so often see to that extent in America with mostly young people who need the money for college going off to fight our wars, and in a much worse, more hideous extent in third world countries where small children become soldiers.
Well, you've definitely done a great job with your character development. Each of them are readily identifiable. They have their own weaknesses, traits, and even though they are fictional and possess abilities outside of the realm of normal humans, they are very much human and easy for readers to relate to and identify with. So, again, good job on that. Okay, so The Apex State, this is the next story arc in Ruby Nation, and you're getting ready to start that. What can readers expect?
In addition to the aforementioned hive mind that's now controlled the world, Ruby is carrying Jiro's child, a post-human child, the first conceived through actual relation as opposed to just being created from someone else against their will or grown in a vat. And since the fetus has caused some side effects to Ruby that are potentially threatening to her life, she's surrendered herself to Beagle in the hopes of finding some way to make sure that she and her child can be healthy, which is an absolutely sadistic choice. So the story is split up into two distinct parallel narratives. For the text pieces, it's Ruby's time in the Beagle headquarters as she awaits to receive whatever surgery she's going to get. And when she meets Dr. Tori Karkaria, who's behind all of this, that's a scene that I've been waiting many years to show. So that's all I'll say about that. And the main story in the main comic pages is Jiro trying to find Ruby to make sure she's safe and to, not to mince words, kill everyone and anyone who gets in his way. And the other characters have to see, even Elise is taken aback by how far Jiro is going, because while she has her various problems with losing control, Jiro is relatively in control while he's deciding to do things. There's a difference between attacking someone when you fly into a rage and you're not thinking straight and making a premeditated decision to harm or kill someone. And while under the circumstances, you're definitely meant to sympathize with Jiro and why he's doing what he's doing, I don't want the violence in my comics to ever be fetishized or celebrated.
All right. We will definitely be looking forward to Apex State. Before we run out of time, what is the future for Ruby Nation? Do you ever see it being in print?
Listening to your podcast with Charlie Wise of Groovy Kinda, he described how great it was to have a comic in print form, so his experience with it did give me more incentive to do it. So stay tuned.
Yeah, that interview with Charlie was really fun to do. He's a great guy, very talented, fun to talk to. I'm looking forward to recording the next part of the interview with him. Well, that is all the time we have left for this episode. Thank you very much for being on the show, Neil. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, once Apex State gets rolling, maybe we can have you back on.
I would love that. Thank you.
And that will wrap it up for this episode of Charisma Kills Radio. I hope you folks at home enjoyed the show, and we will see you again next time. And just a little FYI for you, I am currently working on the new recording schedule for Charisma Kills Radio. It may take me a week or two to get this lined up. One of the challenges of doing a show like this is coordinating recording times with the guest, especially if they live in places like Norway. But have no fear, there will be an episode next week and the week after, even if it's just me talking. I know, sounds boring, doesn't it? I'll be sure to make those episodes short and as entertaining as possible. If you are interested in the music that was used for this episode, it was obviously the Doctor Who theme, covered by the Consortium of Genius. You can hear that on the Consortium of Genius website at consortiumofgenius.com. And don't forget, you can follow Charisma Kills Studios on Facebook and visit the homepage at charismakills.com. If you would like to check out Charisma Kills Studios webcomics such as Sweet Dreams Are Made of Worms and Cog Comics, you can find links to them on that homepage as well.